Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Business Movers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. To listen to Business Movers 1 week early and ad-free, join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app. Download the Wondery app in your Apple or Google Play mobile app store today. It's spring 2008 at a private dinner in New York. Two Wall Street titans sit across a table. Richard Dick Fulb, CEO of Lehman Brothers, the world's fourth largest investment bank, and Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson, previously the chairman and CEO of one of Lehman's biggest competitors, Goldman Sachs. The two men are former rivals, but today Dick needs Hank's help. Lehman Brothers is in trouble. The company has too much debt and too much exposure to the real estate market, an industry that's collapsing under the weight of shady lending practices, bad loans, and widespread defaults. Many insiders expect Dick to sell off the company in order to save it. But Dick thinks he has a better plan. He wants to raise new capital to help Lehman weather the storm. And he wants to make sure Hank and the U.S. government will be there to keep Lehman afloat if his plan fails.
Well, Hank, what are your thoughts? Can the government get behind this plan?
Hank sighs and shakes his head.
You need to sell, Dick. The firm, the assets, everything. I'm not giving up control of Lehman. If we raise new capital...
No, Dick. You're leveraged up to your eyeballs. You're investing in hedge funds that are also extremely leveraged. The United States government is not going to just throw money at Lehman while you're taking on that kind of risk.
Bear Stearns took plenty of risk, Hank, and you helped them.
Bear Stearns was an entirely different situation. Like Lehman, the investment bank Bear Stearns is deep in real estate. When the housing market started to fall apart a few months back, Bear Stearns teetered on the verge of collapse until Hank Paulson and the government came to the rescue and bailed them out.
So, Hank, are you saying Lehman should not count on your support?
I'm saying you need to deleverage, sell your assets, pay down your debts. You should get ready to sell the company.
Well, I don't have a buyer.
You and I both know that's not true. For months, Dick has been sitting on a secret offer from a South Korean bank. But he's not interested.
That offer's too low.
It's more than a fair price.
It's insulting.
And I'm not interested in handing over the keys to my kingdom to the Koreans or anybody else.
Swallow your pride, Dick. Take the offer. Please, before it's too late.
Dick grits his teeth. He leans over the table and stares Hank down.
Let me explain something to you, Hank.
I've been in my seat a hell of a lot longer than you were ever in yours at Goldman. This is my company. Don't tell me how to run it.
Well, let me explain something to you, Dick. If you don't get your house in order, the bottom is going to fall out of Lehman. And when it does, we won't be there to help you pick up the pieces.
Dick Fulb did not take Hank Paulson's advice. After their testy exchange, Dick remained confident Lehman would survive, just as it had done for 158 years. During that time, the Wall Street giant grew into a preeminent investment bank, raising capital for or investing in a slew of prominent companies, including Macy's, American Airlines, and 20th Century Fox. And on paper, Lehman looked good, even as the firm drew ever closer to its fateful end. It posted record profits, $3 billion in 2005, $4 billion in 2006, and nearly $4.25 billion in 2007. But in early 2008, when the real estate market began to implode, the profits suddenly stopped. Lehman began to report devastating losses, nearly $7 billion over the span of just 6 months. Ultimately, Dick Fulb began to accept that Lehman was out of options. When Dick turned to Hank Paulson for help, the government did not come to the rescue with a bailout. Instead, they left Lehman to fend for itself. And then, in September of 2008, the Wall Street behemoth filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy, the biggest ever in U.S. history.
You know what? Right now, breaking news here, stocks all around the world are tanking because of the crisis on Wall Street. Lehman Brothers has filed for bankruptcy.
The collapse of Lehman Brothers would burn trillions of dollars of wealth, torch countless banking giants, and engulf the United States and the rest of the world in a financial inferno.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
From Wondery, I'm Lindsey Graham, and this is Business Movers. In September of 2010, 2 years after the Lehman bankruptcy, former CEO Dick Fuld testified to Congress about the failure of the firm. He painted himself and other Lehman executives as victims of uncontrollable market forces and unsympathetic government officials like Hank Paulson. But that's not the whole story. Contrary to what Dick Fuld said in his 2010 testimony, the Lehman disaster was not brought on by uncontrollable forces. The disaster was man-made, and it cost tens of millions of people their jobs, their savings, and their homes. It was soon called the Great Recession. But the U.S. had been in a similar predicament before. In 1933, during the Great Depression, President Franklin D. Roosevelt signed the Glass-Steagall Act. The law was designed to regulate banks and curb the speculation that triggered the Great Depression. There are two basic types of banks, commercial and investment. Commercial banks hold deposits with checking and savings accounts and offer home mortgages. Investment banks make bets on behalf of their customers. The Glass-Steagall Act essentially put a wall between investment and commercial banks so that if Wall Street collapsed, commercial banks and the American families they served would survive. The Glass-Steagall Act remained in force for the next 66 years, helping bring about a time of unprecedented growth in the middle class. A time in which the average American family's single biggest asset, their home, was not something which investment bankers could speculate on. But in 1999, the law was repealed. Some lawmakers wanted to lift regulations and soften lending requirements so that poorer Americans had more access to home ownership. Others believed Glass-Steagall was excessive regulation that had long outlived its usefulness. Regardless of the reasons, the firewall was dismantled and home mortgages were no longer forbidden fruit for investment banks like Lehman, who after the repeal of Glass-Steagall, went all in on real estate. For nearly a decade, business boomed and Lehman raked in billions. But the staggering profits concealed a serious underlying problem, one that CEO Dick Fuld seemed all too willing to ignore. By the mid-2000s, the U.S. real estate market was a bubble, ready to burst. The market was artificially inflated by subprime mortgages or home loans given to people with bad credit and little to no income. If too many of these subprime borrowers defaulted on their loans, the real estate market would collapse and take Lehman Brothers with it. But not everyone inside Lehman was blind to this possibility. As far back as 2005, a small band of Lehman insiders saw that there was, as one trader put it, an iceberg ahead. These traders did everything in their power to steer the company they loved away from danger. This is the first episode in our four-part series on Lehman Brothers, Lawrence and Larry. It's summer 2005 on the trading floor at Lehman Brothers headquarters on 745 7th Avenue in Manhattan. As usual, the temperature on the floor is a brisk 60 degrees. The bosses at Lehman always keep it cool on the floor, even in the winter. Like a Vegas casino, they want the oxygen flowing so the traders stay high with energy. But in a conference room on another floor, the air is stuffy. Two traders step out of a long meeting that's just wrapped up. Lawrence McDonald, a newly hired vice president, and his mentor and supervisor, Larry McCarthy, the head of distressed debt. The two traders have a lot in common. They're longtime friends. They both came up together in Massachusetts, and they both specialize in distressed debt, which means they're experts at identifying problem areas in the market. As the two friends make their way back to the trading floor, they hear a voice call out.
Hey, Lawrence. Larry.
The two men turn around to find Alex Kirk, a Lehman executive, coming their way. Alex is a giant of a man, 6 feet tall, with a commanding presence.
So, what'd you guys think of that presentation?
Larry shrugs. Lawrence does the same.
Alex?
Same old, same old.
Oh, come on. You're distressed debt guys, aren't you? Surely you have something to say about our position in real estate.
The two men share a glance. Lehman is heavily invested in the booming housing market. But unlike many of their colleagues, Lawrence and Larry are bearish on real estate. They think the market is at its peak and likely to fall. But real estate is big business at Lehman, and it pays out big monthly profits, which makes the bosses on the 31st floor reluctant to hear any dissenting opinions. So Lawrence chooses a measured response.
Well, Alex, it's hard to argue with the revenue the mortgage guys are bringing in. But if I'm being honest, a little caution wouldn't hurt.
Alex sizes the two men up for a moment before speaking.
All right, come with me.
Alex leads Lawrence and Larry to a private corner of the building where he can speak more freely.
Guys, this housing market, it's roided up.
Hearing this, Lawrence's eyes go wide. He's felt the same for some time, but he's never had the courage to say it out loud. As far as he knows, no one has. He looks over at his friend Larry, whose eyes are just as big.
Yeah, man, this whole thing is ridiculous. We are way too exposed in real estate.
Lawrence asks a pertinent question.
How exposed are we?
Alex shakes his head.
No, I can't give you specifics, but I can tell you this. The housing market is living on borrowed time, and so is Lehman. Even if the bosses upstairs don't want to believe it.
Larry breaks his silence.
I couldn't agree with you more, Alex. We need to convince those morons to back the hell off.
Nah, that's never going to happen. Not as long as the profits keep pouring in. The best we can do right now is hedge our overall position, offset as much risk as we can. So, Larry, if you had to say, what's the first domino that's going to fall here?
In my opinion, probably construction companies.
Then let's short the hell out of them.
Short selling is a complex financial strategy where a trader bets against a company, hoping that their stock price will fall to a certain level. If the trader is right, the payout can be massive. Larry loves the idea.
All right. Well, whatever you need, Alex, I'm on board.
Lawrence, what about you?
Lawrence sighs. He's new to Lehman, and he doesn't want to ruffle too many feathers. But he also doesn't want to see anything bad happen to the company.
Working here is a lifelong dream of mine. So I'll be damned if I sit back and watch while they run this place into the ground. Count me in.
All right. Then let's get hedged, gentlemen.
Immediately after their conversation with Alex, Lawrence and Larry got right to work. They ordered the analysts to research major home builders with lots of debt and overexposure to first-time homebuyers, people more likely to foreclose. Within a matter of hours, the analysts had generated a shortlist, and it didn't take Lawrence and Larry long to zero in on their target. Beazer Homes USA, a publicly traded home builder based out of Atlanta. The next morning, Lawrence and Larry made their case to Alex. Beazer was not just building homes, they were also lending people the money to buy them, which put the company in an extremely precarious position. If enough of those borrowers defaulted, Beazer would implode. Alex was sold. Lawrence and Larry put several $1 million on the line shorting Beazer. If their bet was right, the payoff would be at least fivefold. If they were wrong, they'd have to answer for the millions they gambled away. The only thing left to do was watch and wait. Lawrence and Larry believed Lehman was in a dangerous position, though they didn't yet know the full extent of the problem. But the two traders were not blind to the fact that at Lehman, they were in the minority. CEO Dick Fault and most of the executives on the 31st floor were not bears when it came to real estate. They remained very bullish, believing the real estate market was bound to keep going up. The people in the mortgage department agreed, as did most of the traders on the floor, and Lehman's revenues seemed to reinforce their opinion. In the first two quarters of 2005, Lehman brought in nearly $15 billion, a significant portion of which came directly from subprime real estate debt. But Lawrence and Larry saw the subprime market for what it really was, a complex shell game. Mortgage brokers, or shadow banks as Lawrence called them, were lending money to borrowers for home purchases. But these were not commercial banks with depositors and cash on hand. So these shadow banks had to borrow money of their own to make the loans. The shadow banks then bundled their mortgages and sold them in bulk to Wall Street firms like Lehman. But Lehman wasn't a commercial bank either, and also had to borrow money to pay for the mortgages. Lehman would then convert that debt into a mortgage-backed security. They would slice it up into hundreds of smaller bonds and sell those off to banks, hedge funds, and private investors all over the world. Many of these bonds were loaded up with toxic mortgages, but investors didn't know because credit rating agencies like Fitch and Moody's were giving these bonds AAA ratings. The rating agencies were happy to be generous. After all, they were charging companies like Lehman huge fees for their rating services. And buyers were happy too. They got big returns on these bonds, and Lehman got big monthly commissions. Everyone made money, and would continue to do so if the original borrowers kept making their payments. But Lawrence and Larry believed that was a big if. They would soon find out that they weren't alone in their opinion. In June 2005, Lawrence received an email from Alex Kirk inviting him to a meeting featuring a VIP guest, Mike Gelband, the newly named managing director and global head of fixed income at Lehman. Mike had been at Lehman for 20 years. He was a big guy with a shaved head and a reputation for being one of the best traders at the firm. In the email, Alex made it clear that Lawrence would want to be at this meeting. Something big was about to happen. The next morning, Lawrence joined Alex, Larry, and a few dozen other traders in a third-floor conference room at Lehman headquarters. Looking around, it didn't take Lawrence long to notice that there was one group of people conspicuously absent from the meeting, the mortgage department. As Mike began his presentation, Lawrence realized why. The main subject of Mike's presentation was the shadow banks. Their brokers were earning massive commissions for selling exotic loans to low-income borrowers who could probably never pay them back. The brokers didn't care about that fact, though, and neither did their employers. Their job was to sell the loans, bundle them up, and ship them off to Wall Street firms. If the borrowers defaulted, it was not the brokers that were on the hook. It was companies like Lehman. And in Mike's view, the borrowers were certain to default, especially when their interest rates suddenly jumped through the roof, one of the features built into certain types of subprime loans. With too many defaults, Mike explained, the entire real estate market would crumble. Mike predicted that it wouldn't happen for a couple of years, but it was inevitable. And when the bottom fell out, Mike said, it would happen fast. Most of the Lehman faithful in the room were skeptical, but Lawrence and Larry felt vindicated. Mike had reinforced what they'd been thinking for some time, and he had done it openly and publicly in direct defiance of the status quo and the powers that be upstairs. At the end of Mike's presentation, Alex briefly took the floor. He implored the traders in the room to be discreet about what Mike had just told them. Before they could do anything about it, Mike first needed to make his case to the mortgage department and win their support. Then, after the meeting, Lawrence pulled Larry aside and expressed his dismay that many at the meeting so obviously did not agree with Mike's assessment. Larry scoffed. He called them children, saying, "Last time we had a bear market, those kids were in diapers. The kids didn't understand, but they also didn't matter. It was the leaders at the mortgage department that did." When Mike finally sat down with them, they were anything but welcoming. The mortgage department dismissed Mike, calling him too conservative. One of them chided that this bull market's exploding. Right now, we're carrying Lehman's balance sheet, and this kind of talk will have a bad effect on people. Their message seemed to be, keep your mouth closed and keep your opinions to yourself. But the mortgage department would have been wise to heed Mike's warning. Because in early 2006, after a year of exploding growth, construction company Beazer USA suddenly collapsed due to mortgage defaults. The company nearly went bankrupt, and Lawrence and Larry's short position paid out millions. And that was just the beginning of bad news for the bulls of the 31st floor. The chief economist for Merrill Lynch announced that over the past 2 years, U.S. home sales had dropped nearly 40%, the biggest dip in a decade.
The economists also pointed out that in 2005, a substantial portion of the total number of mortgages issued were subprime. Still, the bosses on the 31st floor did not seem concerned. In fact, Lawrence and Larry began to hear rumors that Lehman was considering making a play to acquire New Century, one of the biggest mortgage brokers in California, a company neck-deep in subprime mortgages. Lawrence worried that Lehman was heading straight for a cliff, and that if he didn't do something about it, the bosses on the 31st floor would drive the company right over the edge. So Lawrence set a secret plan in motion to infiltrate New Century and blow up the deal. Business Movers is sponsored by Fiverr. I've been remodeling my studio for like 2 years, and it's almost finished, I tell myself. But the list is longer than I want to admit to, and I haven't touched any of these few last things for months. Why? Because finishing what you start is pretty dang hard. You lose focus, and as the big stuff gets done, you're left with a profusion of smaller tasks that don't grab your attention. That's not good for my studio, and it's not good for your business. Sweat the smaller stuff and let Fiverr Business help. They'll give you access to an all-star team of freelancers with exactly the skills and time you don't have, plus all the tools and support you need to integrate them into your existing workflow, collaborate with your team, manage projects, and share freelancers all in one workspace. I need help all the time, and I'm glad to know Fiverr is there, because when it's time to finish what you started, Fiverr helps you find the top talent to get it done. Right now, you can sign up for Fiverr Business absolutely free for the first year. Get 1 year free and save 10% on your purchase on Fiverr Business with promo code MOVERS. Just go to fiverr.com/business and don't forget promo code MOVERS.
If you travel for work, you know to pack 2 suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/youknowbusiness.
It's 2006 at a sushi restaurant in New York. Lehman Vice President Lawrence McDonald shares a meal with Managing Director Alex Kirk. It's supposed to be a social occasion, but Lawrence has other things on his mind.
Alex, I need your help.
With what?
Lehman's balance sheet.
Alex stops eating. He smiles wryly.
So this is business, not pleasure?
No, we're just two friends talking.
Yeah, but what are we talking about exactly?
Well, you know, if the worst comes and the market collapses, we need to be prepared to launch a rescue operation.
Well, I agree completely. But to do that effectively, I need to know some things.
Mm-hmm. Such as?
Our total exposure in subprime.
Alex sighs.
You know I can't tell you that.
Officially, no.
No, Lawrence, I can't, really. That's privileged information for directors only. If I told you, I could lose my job.
Alex, come on. I need to know how big to short on the other side.
It's smart thinking, but I'm sorry. No, I can't help you. I can't tell you.
I'm just trying to get my head around the size of the problem so I can protect our balance sheet.
Look, we scored a big victory with Beazer, Lawrence. Just keep plugging away at the construction companies.
Nah. Construction is small change, and so is Beazer.
If we really want to protect Lehman's position, we're going to have to go after the mortgage brokers, the shadow banks. You and I both know the housing market is straining. It's only a matter of time before it bursts. And when it does, we need to be ready.
Alex pauses for a moment. He looks around the room to make sure there are no prying eyes or ears. Then he leans forward and whispers,
"Whatever you need to do to keep us hedged, you have my support. But be smart about it. You know the bosses upstairs are high on real estate. If they find out you're betting against their biggest moneymaker, they won't like it. So for your own sake, be discreet."
Lawrence and Larry's short on Beazer USA didn't ruffle too many feathers at Lehman because, one, it made money, and two, it was a bet against a construction company, not the heart of the problem, mortgages. Rumors were still swirling that Lehman might try to acquire the mortgage company New Century, but Lawrence was determined not to let that happen. After spending countless hours researching, Lawrence was all but certain that New Century was overexposed in subprime, but he didn't have the full picture. Lawrence decided that the best way to get it was to fly out west and see it for himself.
In August of 2006, Lawrence and his friend David Gross, a fellow Lehman trader, took a secret trip to California. Only Alex, Larry, and a few others knew what they were really up to. Everyone else thought the two friends were heading to the West Coast to meet with a few clients and play some golf. But after arriving in California, Lawrence and his friend David hopped in their rental car and drove 50 miles south of Los Angeles to New Century's headquarters. Upon their arrival, one of the first things Lawrence and David noticed were the cars in the parking lot. BMW, Ferrari, Bentley. David joked that maybe he and Lawrence were in the wrong profession. After scoping out the building, Lawrence realized that there was no point in trying to worm their way inside. There were too many people on site and too much security. But Lawrence also knew it was imperative they talk face-to-face with the mortgage brokers, the ones who owned the fancy cars and likely paid for them with subprime cash. Lawrence had a nickname for these wheelers and dealers. He called them bodybuilders because they were generally toned and tan. And Lawrence figured the best place to find bodybuilders was to locate the nearest high-end restaurant. The pricier, the better. Lawrence found a spot just a stone's throw from New Century headquarters. He and David took a seat at a table in the corner and waited for the lunch rush to hit. Not long after noon, the bodybuilders started to trickle in. Lawrence slid up next to a group of them at the bar and struck up a casual conversation. Lawrence played his part well. He was a Wall Street guy in town for pleasure, but he didn't mention Lehman Brothers. It didn't take much work to get the bodybuilders to talk, especially after a few drinks. They were cocky, boisterous, and loose-lipped. They bragged about the money they were making in subprime, $500,000 a year or more in some cases. The bodybuilders weren't worried about the market crashing or even slowing down, and they weren't anxious about borrowers defaulting on their mortgages. The general consensus was, it's not their problem. They just sold the loans, they said. After that, it was someone else's cross to bear. Lawrence pressed the issue, but what about the poor folks who would not be able to make the payments? Again, the bodybuilders repeated the refrain, not our problem. They were high on subprime and high on New Century. Lawrence was not. He had done his research. He knew there was a wave of mortgage rate resets coming. Hundreds of thousands of subprime borrowers were about to see their monthly payments shoot up. And after talking to the bodybuilders, Lawrence was certain that the inevitable cascade of defaults would topple New Century. Armed with this information, Lawrence and David hopped on a red eye and flew back to New York. As Lawrence left California, he still didn't know how deeply Lehman was invested in subprime, but he was confident that New Century would be among the first dominoes to fall. After touching down at JFK, Lawrence headed straight to the office to debrief his good friend, Larry McCarthy. Lawrence delivered his findings. In the year 2000, New Century's loan origination business was just over $6 billion. In 2006, it was likely to surpass $60 billion, 10 times that figure. New Century was selling $5 billion worth of mortgages a month, a substantial portion of which was subprime. New Century stock was still up, but Lawrence believed the stock's 10% dividend, one of the biggest on the market, was artificially propping up the stock value. If the housing market fell, New Century stock would crash. After hearing Lawrence's report, Larry didn't blink. He moved fast to take a huge short position on New Century. Larry and Lawrence put millions on the line. But if New Century did collapse, Lehman would profit tens of millions of dollars. For the next few weeks, Lawrence and Larry watched New Century stock with bated breath. But the mortgage giant didn't collapse. The stock continued to climb. Meanwhile, word was getting around the company that Lawrence had flown to California to research New Century. The mortgage department heard all about Lawrence and Larry's short play, too. They all but laughed it off and pointed to the revenue. In the first two quarters of 2006, Lehman had made over $32 billion in revenue, largely from real estate. Things were looking good for the bulls. And as New Century stock continued to climb well into the fall, Lawrence and Larry were starting to sweat. One night, Lawrence and his mentor Larry met for a drink at a sports bar to commiserate. But their evening was interrupted when a fellow Lehman trader walked in the door, seeming upset. When Lawrence asked him what was wrong, the trader asked him, "Did you see that move in the ABX today?" The ABX, or the Assets-Backed Securities Index, tracks the price of mortgage bonds. For a decade, as the real estate market soared, the ABX was a straight line pointing up. But on this day, the ABX suddenly dipped, The trader was worried. He told Lawrence and Larry that it was the first sign of volatility I've ever seen on that index. This is serious. The next day, when the ABX dipped again, Lawrence and Larry doubled down on their short position against New Century. Around this time, they discovered something else, too. The answer to a question that had been gnawing at Lawrence for some time. Through back channels, the two men learned that in 2006 alone, Lehman had underwritten over $100 billion in mortgage-backed securities, and a substantial chunk of it was subprime. As the year wore on, the situation continued to worsen. The ABX continued to dip, housing prices dropped, foreclosures and repossessions rose. The edge of the cliff was getting closer, but no one was slowing down. Not Lehman, and not their competitors on Wall Street either. Lawrence and Larry knew they couldn't change the past, but they did hope they could safeguard the future by evening out Lehman's balance sheet and making short bets to hedge Lehman's overall position. But they also knew that shorting a few construction companies and mortgage brokers would not be enough. To truly save Lehman, Lawrence and Larry needed to get the attention of CEO Dick Fuld. Dick guided the overall direction of the company. And Lawrence and Larry figured the best way to get his attention was to first earn the support of as many of Lehman's top executives as they could. Lawrence and Larry already had Alex Kirk and Mike Gelband in their corner, but they knew there was strength in numbers. So the two friends got to work on what Lawrence called the mother of all presentations. The plan was simple. Larry would gather a couple dozen of Lehman's department heads, make his case, and try to recruit an army of dissenters. There was plenty of resistance to Lawrence and Larry's ideas, especially from the mortgage department. The mortgage team pointed to Lehman's balance sheet and New Century's still climbing stock as evidence Lawrence and Larry were off the mark. If there was a problem with subprime, it was contained. Larry was furious. The evidence that the market was cooling was indisputable. But instead of dealing with the problem, they continued to look the other way. Larry decided enough was enough. He resolved himself to confront the problem head on and force the head of the mortgage department to wake up. Business Movers is sponsored by ZipRecruiter. We're witnessing a sea change in the labor market. Millions of jobs are open, with millions more workers wondering if their current job is really for them. Demand is high, and the supply is picky, making hiring a fraught process right now. How can your business compete to find the new employees you need? Turn to ZipRecruiter. Try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/movers. When you post a job on ZipRecruiter, they send your job to over 100 top job sites. Then, ZipRecruiter's matching technology scans resumes to find qualified candidates for your open roles and proactively presents them to you. You can then invite your top choices to apply for your job, which encourages them to apply faster. ZipRecruiter's technology is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/movers. That's ZipRecruiter.com/MOVERS. ZipRecruiter.com/movers. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. It's early 2007 at Lehman headquarters. Larry McCarthy strides across the trading floor, a man on a mission. He's angry. For months, Larry's been sounding the alarm about the dangers of the subprime real estate market. But no one in Lehman's mortgage department seems to care. But today, Larry has decided that he is going to make them listen. So he closes in on Dave Scher, mortgage department head.
Dave!
Oh, God. What do you want, Larry? I'm busy.
It's important.
All right. Fine.
Larry thrusts a piece of paper into Dave's arms.
And what's this?
It's a report Lawrence McDonald put together. I took the liberty of highlighting a particular section for you to read.
Oh, God.
Spare me the trouble and just tell me what it says. It says that the total dollar value of real estate in the U.S. is roughly $20 trillion.
Well, that sounds like a healthy number to me.
Yeah, except it's down $3 trillion from 2 years ago.
And how can that be, Dave? You're the head of the mortgage department, so tell me. How can the market go up if the value of real estate is going down?
Lawrence's numbers must be wrong.
They're not. I checked them myself. We've been following the housing market closely. We know what's going on with the subprime. The problem, if there is one, is contained.
Oh, God, that's crap and you know it.
Hey, don't take that tone with me.
The situation is volatile, Dave. There's no lending standards anymore. The brokers have been handing out subprime mortgages like a damn candy to anyone who will take them. They're creating a ticking time bomb. Dave scoffs. You don't know what you're talking about, Larry. Like hell I don't.
You know what? Do us all a favor and just keep your ideas to yourself, because you're an idiot.
Larry fumes. He gets right in Dave's face. You're
a kite, Dave. You and the rest of the mortgage guys need to get your heads out of the clouds and come back down to earth, or we're going to suffer.
Larry, let it go.
It's an order.
No, you don't get to tell me what to do.
I may not be your boss, but me and my guys are keeping the lights on around here. And the bosses are in my corner, so do yourself a favor, back off.
Larry did not heed Dave's warning. He and Lawrence pressed on. In early February 2007, Larry delivered his mother-of-all presentations to a room full of senior managing directors, including Dave Scher. In the meeting, Larry pulled no punches. The cancer in the subprime market was spreading. No one was safe. Not construction companies, not mortgage brokers, and not investment banks like Lehman. At one point, Dave Scher interjected. He assured the rest of the executives in the room that Lehman was fine. The subprime problem was contained. Larry fired back. Dave, you mortgage guys have been keeping us in the pitch dark and feeding us shit. Lehman was not fine, Larry insisted, and the problem was not contained. Lehman was deep into a dangerous game with no exit strategy. Larry insisted, I know a little bit about gambling, and I know a lot about risk. We have too much. Far, far too much. Larry knew that the shadow banks were still issuing subprime mortgages, and investment banks like Lehman were still buying them by the bundle. But all across Wall Street, traders were having trouble selling them on the bond market, because like Larry, private investors were wising up, which potentially meant Lehman was stuck with subprime mortgages on their balance sheet, more than enough to take Lehman down. Larry's recommendation was clear. Lehman needed to move fast and take heavy short positions before the whole market came crashing down. After the meeting, one of the executives pulled Larry aside and thanked him for his candor. But the executive also wanted to know, why now? It was clear to Larry that the executive still didn't get it. So Larry pointed out a window off to the horizon and boomed, you see that right out there? That's a f***ing iceberg, and we're headed straight for it. Flank speed. Even the goddamn Titanic tried to swerve. Lawrence and Larry were learning that getting Lehman to change course was a monumental task, in no small part because the ever-powerful mortgage department did not want to change. Dave Scher certainly didn't. Dave and his mortgage team were kings at Lehman. They had the support and blessing of CEO Dick Fuld, and they had the wind at their backs. In the early part of 2007, despite the warning signs that trouble was ahead, the real estate market was still paying big, and companies like New Century were still going strong until February 2007. 6 months after Lawrence chatted up the bodybuilders in that restaurant in California, suddenly and without warning, New Century stopped issuing loans. The stock price immediately tanked, and New Century filed for bankruptcy. Lawrence and Larry's short position paid handsomely, but the two friends knew it wasn't enough. New Century was just the beginning. It was only a matter of time before the entire house of cards toppled down. Still, even after New Century's collapse, the powers that be at Lehman seemed unmoved. In mid-March, Lehman's CFO held a video conference and assured analysts from all over the world that everything was fine. Lawrence and Larry knew it wasn't true. In 2006, Lehman had moved $40 billion worth of mortgage-backed securities. In 2007, that number had dropped to $22 billion, almost half. Lehman was struggling to offload these subprime mortgages. Additionally, the company had borrowed to buy these loans. Lehman was over-leveraged. Lawrence and Larry had tried to steer Lehman away from the iceberg, but the mortgage team didn't want to hear it. Still, Lawrence and Larry understood that Lehman was controlled by one man, CEO Richard Dick Fuld. Dick was a bull through and through, and this bull loved real estate and its big monthly payouts. To save Lehman from disaster, Lawrence and Larry would have to show Dick the error of his ways. But the two men had no relationship with a man they called King Richard. What they needed was someone with power, prestige, and access to the 31st floor. They needed a champion to march upstairs and fight for their cause. In the company's hour of need, Lawrence and Larry would rely on Mike Gelband, the Lehman executive who had first spoken out against subprime. with Mike as their banner man, Lawrence and Larry would sound the alarm, rally the troops, and wage war against Lehman's CEO. From Wondery, this is episode 1 of The Collapse of Lehman Brothers for Business Movers. On the next episode, Mike Gelban fights his way up to the 31st floor to challenge Lehman's CEO. But to save the company he loves, Mike will have to risk everything. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Business Movers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. If you'd like to learn more about Lehman Brothers, we recommend A Colossal Failure of Common Sense, the inside story of the collapse of Lehman Brothers by Lawrence McDonald and Patrick Robinson. The Murder of Lehman Brothers, an inside look at the global meltdown by Joseph Tibman. And The Devil's Casino, Friendship, Betrayal, and the High-Stakes Games Played Inside Lehman Brothers by Vicky Ward. A quick note about our dramatizations. In most cases, we can't know everything that happened, but all our reenactments are based on historical research. Business Movers is hosted, edited, and executive produced by me, Lindsey Graham, for Airship. Audio editing by Molly Bach. Sound design by Derek Behrens. Music by Lindsey Graham. This episode is written and researched by Stephen Walters. Executive producers are Stephen Walters for Ritual Productions and Jenny Lauer Beckman and Marshall Louie for Wondery.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just 3 simple ingredients: popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.